headlines. In Iran, people flocked to the streets in two major cities to pay tribute to the victims of Wednesday's terrorist attack. Russia accuses Britain of exploding the Nord Stream gas pipeline last month, directly blaming London for sabotaging critical Russian infrastructure. Also, at least a dozen people, including women and children, are killed after two car bomb explosions rocked Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Warm welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. In Iran, funerals have been held for the victims of a recent terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. In the city of Mashhad, thousands of mourners turned out for the funeral service. They chanted slogans condemning terrorism and those being behind the crime. Another funeral was also held in Shiraz earlier in the day. At least 15 people were confirmed dead in the Wednesday terrorist attack, among them women and children. Over two dozen others were also wounded. A gunman started shooting from one of the entrances of the shrine. He then headed to the main compound, firing randomly at pilgrims and staff. The assailant was finally injured by security forces and later succumbed to his wounds in the hospital. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the attack. Simonson Abbas is a journalist and political commentator joining us from London. We also have Firas Al-Najim, manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, who joins us from Toronto. Gentlemen, welcome. Simonson Abbas, I'll first start with you. You have the joint statement coming from the ministries in terms of the intelligence on this that was announced yesterday, and that's still making news because it's a developing story. They're releasing bits and parts of this report, which is quite extensive. But what we do know are things like the U.S. Spending $53 million, for example, to keep the protests going and maybe to have started them in some sense. You have also things like the U.S. U.S.'s CIA to have collaborated with British and the Israeli intel services. Revelations of this sort, which shows obviously foreign hands at play here. When these revelations are made, the next thing is what Iran should do. What do you think Iran's reaction should be to this?
Well, of course, it's something that can't be tolerated, but Iran has demonstrated a lot of patience, with so much of the infiltration, the spying, the assassination, because this is not the first time something like this has happened. So I would imagine, just looking at the way the Islamic Republic has responded in the past, it'll be a measured response. It has to be a measured response, because the war that the Islamic Republic is engaged in, and it's a war really orchestrated by the Anglo-Zionist Empire and not provoked by Iran, is something which has been going on since 1979, the revolution onwards. So the response is, of course, to General Qasem Soleimani. We saw that there was an immediate response with the Ayn al-Assad camp hit by ballistic missiles. We've seen on other occasions when the IRGC was targeted in parades in Iran, that again, there were missiles that were launched at the groups that were implicated. I think they were based in Iraq, and they were Kurdish linked at that time. Al-Jundala, for instance, have been responded to by cutting off their sources and also targeting them individually too. So there can be many options of military kinds, but also I think that the actual response, which is already ongoing, is that Iran has a very powerful asymmetric response, asymmetric warfare response to all this. The interests of the Zionist Western Empire are being thwarted right across West Asia. So, you know, to say there should be a response, the reality is that the Islamic Republic of Iran is in a war, soft, smart, and hard power war. It's largely holding its own, if not winning, in many, many sectors, from Yemen through to Lebanon, through to Syria, through to Iraq. You can argue very strongly that the policy of the Iranians has been successful. As far as terrorism goes, of course, strengthening of the internal security, doubling up of more investment in security apparatus, more techniques for being able to infiltrate these groups abroad, further techniques of being able to show that they too can infiltrate the territories of perhaps Israel, perhaps even other powers that have been involved. And let's not forget, Saudi Arabia happens to be one of those powers implicated today. Israel, of course, the US, and Great Britain. Is it time, perhaps, for Iran to take action on their territories? I'm not sure that that would be welcomed. The truth is, there are so many fault lines and so many weaknesses within America and its allies, Israel itself. Should Iran really decide to take action in their lands the way that the Western powers are doing, to destabilize Iran, to create color revolutions, to create turmoil, to try and have ordinary citizens killed at will, nuclear scientists assassinated, generals on diplomacy missions assassinated? If Iran was to go on this full gambit, I wonder how the Anglo-Zionist Empire would react. Clearly, the provocation they would then say would be tantamount to a declaration of war. Of course, when they do it, it's really just regarded as par for their hegemony's needs and their economic interests. I think it's sagacity, wisdom, and patience is going to be the way that Iran is going to operate again on this occasion.
There was, for us on the regime, a counterterrorism meeting that took place a couple days ago for 2 days in India. And I've sifted through the statements that were given by different representatives. And this counterterrorism meeting, obviously, at the core of it, as the title suggests, is what can be done to counter terrorism. And there were lots of sympathy going out to like country like India, which suffered that 2008 Mumbai attack. But there was no mention of Iran. As a matter of fact, from what I'm seeing here, anyways, up to this point, the U.S. representative this to have occurred, the terrorist attacks to have occurred in Iran a day earlier, did not come out and mention anything. And it's quite telling that Iran has come out and actually accused the U.S. of complicity. This shows the double standards that's at play over here. Why is this demonization so widespread when it comes to Iran, based on how you see it?
Yes, obviously the West is biased in this issue. And, you know, for them, their project is to divide and conquer, and, you know, whoever's in their way. And Iran is a government that is in their way because they're supporting the axis of resistance and they're fighting for the Palestinian rights especially. And that is not in the interests of the U.S. and their allies. And for that reason, they support these terrorist acts and these terrorist organizations, and they don't condemn terrorist acts like this gruesome act that happened in Shiraz, where 15 innocent people were killed and murdered in such a gruesome way. And it was, you know, the video was circulated everywhere on social media. They don't condemn it. They don't come out publicly and condemn it. So that means they support the terrorist acts and they're quiet about it. Because it's they believe it's in their interest. They know they cannot destroy the Islamic Republic of Iran or hurt it. So they're trying to just, you know, cause some little turbulences here and there and hope that there could be grudges internally inside Iran and more divisions and seditions. But this will all fail miserably. We know this through the history. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been dealing with so much pressures, so much media war, so much politicians, you know, defaming the real picture of who the Islamic Republic of Iran is and who's Ayatollah Khamenei is and his leadership and his, you know, unified nation. His nation came out today in millions. We've seen them in different cities the other day also protesting to support the Islamic Republic of Iran. But we don't see that on mainstream media. They only show one image and they want to show their narrative and their project. This is how biased they are. And unfortunately, they're exposing their real face, that they do support terrorism. Because if they were against terrorism in general, that means even if they're against the Islamic Republic of Iran, that means when a terrorist attack happened inside Iran, they should come out quickly and rapidly and condemn that type of terrorist attack. But as we see, they don't care about humanity, and humanity is selective for them. They only care about certain people. They care about Ukrainian people, but they don't care about Palestinian people. They care about certain people in different countries, but they don't care about the Iranian people when they're being killed inside Iran, unless it's feeding their narrative, their project. And, you know, the West should be held accountable for this. And hopefully, you know, when there's real interrogations and there's real testimonies, I think this should be, you know, put all over the media and expose the Western governments and who's backing up these terrorists and these sabotagers, these anarchists, all these people. Like today, I just drove by right now a protest on Yonge Street in Toronto And we've seen, let's say hundreds or maybe a thousand people protesting against the Iranian government. Obviously, this is all supported by the Canadian government. We didn't see one sign of those protesters saying that we condemn the terrorist attack in Shiraz and we mourn the people there. This shows you that even those people that are protesting, they have no care for human rights. If they did, they would at least say that they condemn the attack that happened in Shiraz. Especially inside of a shrine, these people were going inside to do a religious pilgrimage and to go pay respects to a very holy figure. And this city has a holy background to it. And, you know, these people were just visiting. It was normal civilians, you know. They were people that were like women and children and fathers. You know, we see the pictures. It's so painful to see such an attack on such innocent people.
So, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, taking a look at the word that I'm going to take out of what Faraz al-Najim said, which stood out, is the process of selectivity. The selectivity process here, obviously Iran being the choice, if we want to put it into perspective, the countries that were involved in the cooperation amongst themselves on the intel side, namely the U.S., Israel, and Saudi Arabia, we have to also mention the U.K., are they aware that they can also become a subject, for example, Saudi Arabia? We know how active and proactive and rather extremely, I'm not too sure what word to use, other than the fact that incitement is what they are doing practically, that they could, for example, become a victim themselves through the process of selectivity if and when, for example, the U.S. chooses the process for them to be targeted?
Well, firstly, the Saudis are puppets of the Anglo-Zionist Empire. They have no say in most of this foreign policy business. They do as they're told. That's literally how it works. Donald Trump said milking the cow was the priority. That's exactly how they are treated and used. So, of course, it's not in Saudi Arabia's interest. They're one of the countries that's on the front line. It's one of the regional nations which needs to split away from the U.S. and Anglo-Zionist control through the people's revolt, I would say, because the leaders certainly won't do it, because the kowtowing to American policy and Israeli policy only makes them a bigger target. Already they've got missiles and drones raining down on them in Riyadh and various other locations. They already have suffered huge defeat and a huge drain on their finances through the war on Yemen, the poorest country in that region. Already they've lost whatever they were trying to do in Syria, to try and bring down Assad over there. They've lost in terms of their backing of Al-Qaeda and the ISIS-type fraternities, again, on the say-so of the Americas, which they were doing. Everything they've done in the region has failed. And other than creating sectarianism to create regional unrest, act as the base camp for America, et cetera, to carry out its policies, or for the extension of the periphery policy of periphery strategy of Iran and the Yinon plan of Israel, what else has it achieved?
Right.
So I'd say that going even deeper into this quagmire, Saudi Arabia particularly puts itself at huge risk, but also Israel, because let's not forget the rising of the Palestinians is going hand in glove with the rest of the axis of resistance. What you're seeing when you see Palestinians now stand up to Israel is really a successful effort by the axis of resistance to respond to exactly this kind of terrorism that they were doing in Palestine and beyond.
Okay.
So like the reaction and the war is already going on. This business of trying to rattle a few poor individuals in shrines is just desperation. It's an act of desperation on the part of the Anglo-Zionist Empire. It will fail. They won't be held accountable by any international body because the money mafia that backs them controls most of these institutions like the UN. The only way for liberation is going to be through the hands-on struggle. That's the only way that this empire is going to be defeated.
Thank you for that. Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator. Faraz al-Najim, thank you. Manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights. Moving on, after more than a decade of on-off indirect talks, Lebanon and Israel have signed a U.S.-mediated deal to end their maritime dispute. The agreement will allow Lebanon to exploit its own natural resources. Our correspondent Mariam Saleh has more in this report.
Lebanon and Israel have finalized a U.S.-brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. President Michel Aoun signed a letter on Thursday endorsing the agreement. The final paperwork was submitted to the United Nations in Naqoura, southern Lebanon, concluding a long path of indirect negotiations with the Israeli regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, also approved the agreement. The regime's representative then delivered the signed copy to the UN at the Naqoura point. Hezbollah Secretary General stressed in a brief statement that the deal is a victory for Lebanon's government, people, and resistance. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute, saying the resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. Hezbollah leaders said the agreement is not an international treaty.
What happened in Naqoura is not normalization with Israel. This deal is not an international treaty and is not a recognition of Israel. Israel itself has admitted it received no security guarantees.
U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein, who was with the Lebanese delegation in the southern Lebanese town of Naqoura, had met the top Lebanese officials.
I truly believe and hope that this can be an economic turning point in Lebanon for a new era of investment and continued support to lift up the economy and make sure that whatever arrangements happen, they're done openly, transparently, and making sure that the benefits are felt directly by all the Lebanese people.
Experts believe this agreement would put Lebanon on the map of natural gas exporters. President Michel Aoun stressed in his statement that demarcating the southern maritime border is a technical matter that has no political implications and won't change his country's policy towards the Israeli regime. U.S. President Joe Biden has hailed the maritime border deal as a historic breakthrough. For Lebanon, it unlocks the possibility to exploit its own natural resources at a time when the West is seeking gas suppliers and looking for alternatives to Russian gas. Maryam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
News from Ukraine, where the defense ministry says it is suspending a UN-brokered grain export deal with that country. The ministry cited a drone attack on Russian ships, which Moscow says the U.K. was involved in. Russia says the attack took place early Saturday, but Ukraine denies the claim. Meanwhile, the UN has urged parties not to carry out actions that would endanger the grain deal. Russia's announcement comes one day after the UN called on Moscow and Kiev to renew the agreement, which expires on November 19. Grain and fertilizer shipments were stuck in several ports following the start of the war in Ukraine, driving up food prices. The pact was created to bring food prices and to stop food shortfalls in countries heavily dependent on grain imports from Ukraine and Russia. Russia has accused the United Kingdom of involvement in explosions on the Nord Stream gas pipes in the Black Sea.
According to available information, representatives of this unit of the British Navy took part in the planning, provision, and implementation of a terrorist attack in the Baltic Sea on September 26 this year, blowing up the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines.
The defense ministry spokesman also accused British Navy of helping Ukraine plan a drone attack on Russia's Black Sea fleet. The UK's defense ministry has rejected both claims that the British Navy was involved in attacks on Nord Stream and Russia's fleet. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. This is a part of political divine will of the founder of Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Khomeini. The label politicized cleric was made to parallel a religious cleric. This wrong concept still persists in certain groups and governments throughout the world. Recently, satanic superpowers, by implying anti-Islamic governments, have deceptively attached themselves to Islam, have published that beautifully designed Qurans and dispatch volumes all over the world for the sole purpose of the forcing out of the Holy Quran from the scene and thus attaining their satanic objectives.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi, with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the prayers. In one of his speeches, Imam Khomeini mentioned that make your congregations compact, especially on Fridays, and emphasize the importance of religious rites and ceremonies. Now, in this part of his speech, obviously, he is talking about the important issues that are not being highlighted mostly by those who are basically leading the Friday prayer. On the other hand, the people are also not paying attention towards this, and that is the importance of the religious rites and ceremonies. For example, every week there is something happening. There was something that happened in the history. Maybe in a month we have two ceremonies, or there are three or four things that has happened in the history. Therefore, we need to pay attention to all these things so that the people know about what had happened in the history, what we need to pay attention. There are many other things that obviously for every week or every month, there are specific things that we need to perform. There are specific things that we need to take care of them.
Sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
is the duty of the person who's leading the jama'ah to tell people and also the people themselves that they should know about all these things and they aware others during the congregations, during the prayers, when they are gathered in one place. For example, if the month of Safar is coming, for example, or the month of Ramadan, or maybe the month of Sha'ban, there are specific a'mal, there are specific deeds that we need to perform in that month. So it is the duty of us to talk about that, to make it alive, to give awareness to the people. If there are specific fasting in a specific month for the specific dates, we should highlight them. The birth of the imam, the martyrdom anniversary of any imam, maybe something important has happened, maybe there is something important that is going around since the Islamophobia is obviously spreading. How to cope with this challenge, how to tell people how to deal with these things and other issues, all these things should be discussed in the Friday prayer. And therefore, Imam Khomeini is saying that make your congregations compact so that you know what you're doing, you know the goal, where you need to take people and where you want to reach. The main idea is to reach to the perfection. So anything that helps us in reaching to the perfection, we should follow those paths, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In the limelight.
Divisions within the UK Tory party are much more intense than those within other conservative parties in the West. In this regard, we have taken a look at some world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Website of Truth Out wrote, Johnson was the front man in the populist turn, a British Trump. The comparisons with Trump can be overrigged. Johnson doesn't regularly consort with fascists, nor is he quite so graciously vulgar. Yet Trump, he is a lawbreaker and is prone to smear opponents with inflammatory falsehoods. Like Trump, he is a bully in clown's costume. He kicks down, but in an ever-so-British manner through wit. His upbeat humor casts iron confidence, nostalgic racism, casual nastiness towards oppressed communities, and the ability to breezily say unsayable things form the package that topped a cruel strike among many voters who, in insecure times, shore up brittle selves by championing the right to de-ingrate others. Being mocking and facetious, Johnson's banter unsettles the sense of tradition that Tories hold dear. Likewise, his iconoclasm and unpredictability. At one moment, he will blurt out business. The next, he is cordially reminding his financial friends that following the Great Recession, he stuck up for bankers when everyone else wanted to hang them from the nearest lamppost. No wonder many Tory MPs gaze at Boris in mesmerized ambivalence. They share his bigotry and admire his ability to win support among the plebs, yet they shudder at the corrosion of traditional conservative values. Then there is Johnson's lying in pathological profusion to the public frequently, to the EU negotiators, when signing the Northern Ireland Protocol of the Brexit Withdrawal Agreement, and even to the Queen, for goodness sake. His serial mendacity has brought an investigation by Parliament's Privileges Committee into whether he misled MPs over his numerous COVID rule breaches. If found guilty, he would face suspension as an MP. This looming case swayed many Tory MPs against nominating him to replace Truss as party leader. It's sobering to note that, but for this coincidence of timing, Johnson would likely have regained the premiership. Prior to politics, Johnson's career was in the press. It's one of very few economic sectors that largely backed a hard Brexit. The other was finance, with hedge funds to the fore. It was here that Rishi Sunak won his spurs, and he sings to the hedge fund Heimsheet, slash regulations and give the markets free rein. Sunak has become PM against hostility from the populist right. He symbolizes the cosmopolitan globalism they abhor. They may forgive him his U.S. green card, his Santa Monica Beach penthouse, and his vast fortune, but not his marriage to an Indian woman, his skin color, or his recent fiscal policies. As Chancellor under Johnson, he hiked Britain's tax burden to its highest level in 70 years to fund the lockdown furlough scheme. Later, he applied the final shove when Tory MPs removed Johnson from office. Johnson's Secretary of State for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport, Nadine Dorries, went so far as to share a montage of Rishi stabbing Boris in the back. For all the talk of party unity, these scars run very deep. Sunak's government faces a global headwind in the shape of stagflation, but also two homemade poisoned chalices, his and Johnson's previous flops. Of their most vaunted successes, both have flattened to deceive. The first in 2016 was the Brexit referendum. Winning 17 million votes, around a third of the electorate, represented the biggest Democratic vote in British history. Yet the Tory Brexit aim was to inaugurate a new economic growth model with new trade deals assisted by deregulation. This has not gone to plan, as a recent report by the House of Commons Public Accounts Committee makes clear. Britain's per capita GDP has risen less since 2016 than most of Europe and much less than US. Brexit, far from healing intra-Tory schisms, has deepened and multiplied them, including between the Austrian extreme centre Sunak and in the current Chancellor Jeremy Hunt and the populist right Johnson and Truss. Johnson and Sunak's other sham success was the response to COVID. They crow of having quickly purchased vaccines. Overall, however, the let the virus rip instincts that they both shared, compounded by glaring errors such as the nepotistic appointment of a hapless horse racing entrepreneur to head COVID test and trace, led to an abysmal record. The life expectancy of British people, especially in deprived neighbourhoods, slumped. Britain's COVID-caused excess mortality exceeds almost all nations of Western Europe and all the G7 countries, apart from the US. Long COVID continues to afflict around 2 million people, causing labour shortages and burdening the health system. Sunak has defeated Johnson thanks to a rule change stipulating that any prospective leader must secure at least 100 nominations from MPs. Johnson was barely able to secure half that figure. Where does this leave Sunak's government? The bleak fact is that Britain, experiencing eye-watering levels of poverty and chronic ill health, and now racked by a cost-of-living crisis, will re-commerce austerity mode. Its new leader is possibly the richest MP in history and certainly the only prime minister whose wealth exceeds that of the monarch. As a former hedge fund partner, he represents the most destabilizing form of finance. His wife belongs to the non-dom class, that is, the multimillionaires who are permitted to avoid paying tax on the vast bulk of their wealth and earnings. According to tax experts, Sunak has not been transparent with his finances, and his hedge fund background raises questions about his commitment to fighting tax avoidance. As Chancellor, he oversaw what is by some measures Britain's biggest ever rise in inequality. Hated by many in his party and lacking Johnson's charisma, he is set to oversee a final brief spell of Tory rule. At time of writing this article, the writer of the article said, they don't yet know his cabinet team, but they can predict that he will be flanked by Hunt. Notorious for his role as useful idiot for Rupert Murdoch and for having inflicted ruin upon the National Health Service. In short, although Sunak inherits a substantial parliamentary majority, the Tory party is fractious and a substantial segment of MPs and members loathe him. Their majority is likely to disappear as soon as it's subjected to an electoral test. The main beneficiary of the Tory Omni shambles will be Labour. But here's the rub. Labour post-Corbyn has gravitated to the extreme centre. Their leader, Keir Starmer, wishes to repeat the trick of three decades ago. On Black Wednesday of 1992, then Tory government lost confidence of the markets and a sterling slumped. With the Tories branded financially inconsistent, Labour restyled itself New Labour. The party of sound finances, fiscal responsibility and centrist neoliberalism. Having ruthlessly purged his party of left-wing spirit with the sustained application of deceit, corruption and law-breaking, a major email leak has recently revealed Starmer's Labour can offer little but platitudes and market discipline. The aim is to manage the nation's finances in inclement times such that a little space for infrastructure spending can be found, which will rekindle upward circles of GDP growth. It's a bloodless pitch that stands a prospect of electoral success only through the opponent's ineptitude. The fundamental crises of social inequality and democratic decline from which the turbulence of Britain's politics stems would remain unaddressed. The very policies laid down under the last Labour government, including the empowerment of the Bank of England and the financial markets, are co-authors of the economic polarisation, social fragmentation and seething anger that lie behind the recent scenes of chaos at 10 Downing Street. Whether a Sunak premiership survives longer than a Truss, a Johnson or a Lettuce, the turbulence is set to continue in the Tory party.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting.
The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
وحبس بين أطباقها بجرمه وجريرته وهو يضج إليك ضجيج مؤمل لرحمتك ويناديك بلسان أهل توحيدك ويتوسل إليك بربوبيتك.
Dear listeners, we have reached this part of the Divine Kumail supplication. يَا مَوْلَايْ فَكَيْفَ يَبْقَى فِي الْعَذَابِ وَهُوَ يَرْجُو مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكَ أَمْ كَيْفَ تُؤْلِمُهُ النَّارِ وَهُوَ يَأْمُلُ فَضْلَكَ وَرَحْمَتَكَ أَمْ كَيْفَ يُحْرِقُهُ لَهِيبُهَا وَأَنْتَ تَسْمَعُ صَوْتَهُ وَتَرَى مَكَانَهُ My protector, so how should he remain in the chastisement while he has hope for your previous clemency? Or how should the fire cause him pain while he expects your bounty and mercy? How should its flames burn him while you hear his voice, while you see his place? The Quranic verses and traditions, dear listeners, are replete with the fact that Almighty Allah has mercy upon all the servants. So He subhanahu wa ta'ala has granted them all material and spiritual blessings, and He has not deprived a single one of His servants from His bountiful blessings. Now the problem is that some humans are idle. They do not attempt for getting sustenance, so they lose their value. They are deprived of Allah's blessings on their own will. Anyone who wishes, he can gain Allah's material blessings by lawful attempts with no hindrance. He can gain divine bliss by sincere attempts, by truly believing in the Lord of the worlds, so that he would benefit from Allah's mercy in this world and the next one. Allah will give him purified life in the world and in the paradise and hereafter. And this is really interesting, because it is among the wonders of His divine mercy that His holy essence grants great and unbelievable blessings for just few acts. The acts that even the doer of those actions does not believe that he will be given these bounties and blessings for. We'll have a look at some instances after a short break.
My Lord, glory and praise be to you. Would you disregard the voice of a Muslim slave imprisoned in hell for his disobedience and imprisoned within its pits for his evil doings and misdeeds, crying out to you the cries of one who has faith in your mercy, and calling out to you in the language of those who believe in your unity, and seeking to approach you by means of your epithet.
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, let us have a look at one of the instances of Almighty Allah's granting great blessings about Prophet Solomon. Allah's selected servant, this prophet, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, once passed a peasant in a splendid, magnificent manner. Seeing Solomon's glory, the peasant said, "The beneficent Allah has granted the son of David a glorious kingdom." This was brought to Solomon by the wind. Prophet Solomon got up from his top position. He went to the peasant and told him, "Do not wish something whose responsibility you cannot tolerate. If Allah accepts your glorifying Him, it would be better for you than Solomon's king, because the reward for glorifying Allah is eternal, but Solomon's kingdom is finite." In this regard, dear listeners, the late Sheikh Zadugh has narrated a strange tradition in the worthy book of Thawab al-A'mal. One of the companions of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam is reported to have said that I heard Imam Sadiq alayhi salam saying, "Iyyakum wal-kasal," avoid laziness and dullness. "Inna rabbakum rahim yashkuru al-qaleel," because your Lord is beneficent and grants great rewards for your small acts. "Inna ar-rajul la yusalli ar-rak'atayn tatawwu'an yuridu bihima wajha Allahi 'azza wa jall fayudkhiluhu Allahu bihima al-jannah." Someone may accomplish a two-unit prayer, not obligatory, for Allah's sake, so Allah takes him to paradise for it. وإنه لا يتصدق بالدرهم تطوعا يريد به وجه الله عز وجل فيدخله الله به الجنة. There might be a person who willingly gives a drachma away as charity for Allah's sake. Hence, Allah takes him to paradise for it. وَإِنَّهُ لَيَصُومُ الْيَوْمَ تَطَوَّعًا يُرِدُ بِهِ وَجْهَ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلْ فَيُدْخِلُهُ اللَّهُ بِهِ الْجَنَّةِ. And one servant may fast in a day for Allah's sake, and therefore Allah takes him to paradise for it. I mean, what kind of relationship, what kind of connection do you see between this small act of fasting a day, of performing a two-unit prayer and entering paradise? There is no logical connection and relationship between these two, but this is the Lord of the worlds. This is the vast ocean of mercy of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala we're discussing. That is why that the person Imam Ali alayhi salam is describing in this part of the Kumail supplication is still hopeful of the previous clemency of the Lord. فَكَيْفَ يَبَقَى فِي الْعَذَابِ وَهُوَ يَرْجُو مَا سَلَفَ مِنْ حِلْمِكِ. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. In Iran, people flocked to the streets in two major cities to pay tribute to the victims of Wednesday's terrorist attack.